kids. It's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
All this great content not going into the show.
Well, I didn't start the show yet, so why do you care?
I love content.
Yeah, sure. So much concern about the content for the show you're not on.
I care about all content.
What's up, everyone? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. Returning this week, Cole Martin. Cole, how are you doing?
I'm all right. How are you?
Doing good. I feel like there's this shadow looming over this episode.
Like an elephant in the room, if you will.
Pretty much. CJ Greenwood, welcome back.
It's great to be back. Question mark.
How's it going?
It's been going, interestingly, for months.
Your last appearance was a review, like, 2 months ago.
Three months.
And then before that, you were a co-host, so...
That was 4 months ago.
Remember when you quit and you were like, I still want to show up, like, once a month or every now and then.
Hey, this is a now and then, isn't it?
What happened to those other months?
You know, they come by so quickly, and you did offer me one that I really wish I could have taken, but it was a busy season for me. I did really well in a gaming competition, so I didn't want to, like, you know.
What kind of competition?
Well, you guys, do you remember the UHH I was talking about last year?
No.
It's a competition, achievement hunting thing. But it puts you against another player, 20 random achievements, blah, blah, blah. Either way, I made it to the top 8 people out of 2,000 this year. So I was like, pretty fucking hyped about that.
So what you're telling us is you lost.
I did do that.
Okay.
But I get a badge on my profile, damn it.
Oh.
Hey, I'll take it. What? I you know, real life.
Remember that one stretch when you're like, oh, I'm just burnt out on games and I'm burnt out on achievements. I'm done with these competitions and I'm done with these achievement whoring. And what happened to that?
Well, to be fair, it only came back because of the UHH. And since then, I did a little bit of achievement hunting, completed a couple of games. And I was like, you know, I haven't gotten an achievement in like a week. And that's okay because I'm busy. But when I get a chance to play a game, I do go for the achievements. That's just who I am. I'm not going to stop going after achievements. And I'll still I have like 40 fucking easy games with 1,000 gamer score that I could pop in like less than 6 hours each. And I just haven't done them yet.
No Pulse in chat is calling you the 7th loser in that contest.
I did make top 8. So I was of the 8 people. And I did place, I believe, like score wise, I would have placed 7th or 6th.
Oh, out of the top 8, you were the loser then.
No, because the 8th person is the loser of the top 8. I was not the 8th.
I thought you said you finished 8th.
No, I said I finished in the top 8.
Oh, what position were you then?
Well, that's not really a thing because it's an elimination-based competition. So in that round, the top 8, 4 players get eliminated at once. And then it moves on to the top 4.
I'm just hearing excuses for why you wouldn't first.
Seriously, it's okay, CJ.
I was never going to place first. I was happy with what I got, damn it.
In all of our hearts, you will always be the number one loser to all of us.
Well, I'm glad to hear it because, you know, my life's gone perfectly.
So what have you been up to in the months since you've left? I know you were talking about you wanted to get into college. Did that ever happen?
No, but I'm going to schedule classes this weekend, actually. I'm going up to the community college to schedule.
I need to, you know, leave the show. I need to focus on school and going to college and, I need to just take time off of gaming
the
and
problem
focus on
was,
my future.
The problem with the college thing was that I was actually too late to sign up for classes and I didn't realize it yet.
Wait. You give me grief all the time for being late, but you were too late signing up for school?
Yeah, so I was like, I was okay with it.
I was 5:59 when I checked my phone, and you're fussing for me being late. And you didn't even sign up for class on time.
Well, I didn't know when the cutoff period was because I've never signed up for college before.
I didn't know. No college, you're back gaming. You really have no excuse for quitting the show now. All your excuses are gone, man.
No, not really, besides the fact that it was burning me out to do reviews constantly, and I wasn't enjoying any of the games anymore. So, there was that. I wasn't giving my full heart into, like,
well, you're the one who accepted those games when we have a staff of at least, like,
yes,
five.
But if I kept turning them down, every time I would do that, you'd be like, geez, man, you keep turning every fucking game down. You're pissing me off. I'm like,
well, you do. You turn down fucking everything.
Exactly. It did. But now you're telling me I should have just kept turning them down.
I mean, Eternal, she knows how to step up. She gives a shit.
Hey, I gave a shit.
Eternal, who gives more of a shit, you or him?
Definitely her now. I'm having a blast. See, I've been up since 5.
Cole knows what's up because by her biting the bullet and taking Blue Angels and Tour de France this year, she got Call of Duty.
Yeah, I don't really care about Call of Duty.
It's a pretty solid trade-off, though, huh?
I mean, I suppose if that's your cup of tea.
I mean, you could have had Destiny, too.
Yeah, I did buy that, and I've not touched it.
I bought it
for the full price, and I just did not touch the game.
That's a pretty good segue into some of the news of the week. Destiny 2, new expansion, came out this week, and people are fucking pissed. Have you guys heard all the kerfuffle over Destiny 2?
Not much kerfuffle I've heard, but I have heard that it's, like, really short.
Well, there were always complaints about the original Destiny 2 endgame, saying, like, there's not enough to do, everything is just repetition. Like, even the loot, it's not randomized loot, it's just hoping for better, you know, maybe get,
did
like,
did they play Destiny 1? Like, what did they expect?
they expected Destiny 1, and not what Destiny 2 is. That's what people were expecting. Like, all the quality of life changes that showed up from the launch of D1 all the way to the end with all the DLC, they were expecting those kind of changes, and people weren't happy with it, and they thought maybe with the first expansion coming out, it might change things. Everyone is complaining. People have been beating the expansion in like an hour.
Whoa.
Which is pretty crazy.
Believable. Rise of Iron, that last DLC, the main storyline, was only like 2 hours.
Yeah, I think someone said like an hour and 10 minutes they clocked it, beating the campaign stuff in the new expansion. And then even better is the new expansion has actually gated off content from the vanilla version of the game.
Exactly what they did last time.
Yeah. Apparently, like, the prestige achievement in the game, you can no longer get unless you buy...
I kind of figured that was going to turn out to be the case, because you couldn't play the Nightfalls without the expansions.
That's so fucked up.
It really is.
I'm kind of surprised... Didn't Microsoft have a thing like with the base game achievements? It couldn't be anything that you had to pay for outside of the base game
originally, so, but that seems to have changed a lot.
Yeah,
over
and
time.
People are getting refunds because of this. There's
I don't
people
blame them.
Refunding a game that's been out for a couple of months now that I'm sure they've poured dozens, if not hundreds, of hours in because of this bullshit. It's like we just went over all of the horseshit going on with EA, and it made us forget about how shitty of a company Activision could be, too.
Oh, all gaming companies are going to shit.
Yeah, there's a lot of them out there that are kind of shitty.
The only thing that has your back now is indie games.
As long as people support them and they don't go out of business because no one buys them.
Unless it's Horse Racing 2016, in which the case they want to kill your fingers.
I heard that cry for Hammy in the background.
Oh, Hammy. Still heartbroken. I will never be okay. Hashtag never forget.
I'm telling you, doing this show has really, like, years ago, I used to do the whole, you know, share an account on the PS3 with my friend in the Netherlands, and he would get stuff, and I would get stuff when we'd share games. And since doing the show and talking to developers and seeing how much that affects them, like, I am so against any form of game sharing anymore. I hate it because it's basically stealing from developers.
Yeah.
And
I'm kind of surprised it's still a feature.
Well, it's a feature because it's not game sharing. Game sharing is not the feature. The feature is setting a home console so that on your home console, all the other accounts can play the content. So like your brother who has an account on that system, he could play a game without having to buy it himself. Or your mom or your daughter or whoever is playing on your home console, they can play everything without you needing to be around and signed in. That is what the feature is for. Or if you have multiple consoles, one in a bedroom, one in a living room, that way all of your content is available on the one to everybody in the living room, and in the bedroom, all you gotta do is sign in and all your shit is waiting there for you.
Well, that's exactly how our setup is.
Yeah, game sharing is a loophole that is abused in every possible way. People don't care at all. They just want to get free games. That's how people look at it. It's like, oh, well, my buddy's game sharing with me, so I get a bunch of free games. Motherfucker, you're stealing those games. I don't care how people want to sugarcoat it. That is, you're stealing those games. You did not pay for those games. Oh, well, what if he just let me borrow his disc? Then he couldn't play that disc while you had it. But if he has, I don't know, if he has Castle Crashers and you're game sharing with him and you're playing Castle Crashers online together, you stole a copy of the game. There's no other way to put it. You stole Castle Crashers. You paid for a copy and you got two. That is theft. What? I don't know what other way to put it, but people, they just fight and they think that they're entitled to game share, and I don't get it.
Motherfuckers. And it is just not worth it anyway. I mean, there's too much risk involved with it in the first place.
Yeah. I mean, look, there's people who are like, oh, well, I can't share this content in this game. Well, the developer decided that that's not allowed to be shared. Good. I wish more developers would do that. I play Rock Band, and I'm proud of the fact that I own every Rock Band song. I saw someone playing Rock Band, and he had, like, I don't know, 1,200 songs. And then a week or two later, he had 2,200. I'm like, where the fuck did you get all those songs? He's game sharing. So he didn't buy those songs. Mm-hmm. He just stole 1,000 songs. That's $2,000 he stole from Harmonix.
That's a lot of money.
That's a lot of fucking money.
It does add, I think Why would you spend that much money on songs? I think people don't realize that game sharing does add up like that. That it is does. Just, you know, oh, and then you think, okay, you know, if you're game sharing and you win a code from Twitter or from us or whatever, then your game sharing, that company gave that code, they expected to, you know, give up one copy of the game. But if you're game sharing, and they've just lost two copies of that game right there. And that's not what they've budgeted for. That's not what they've expected. That has a negative impact. And especially when we're talking these smaller indie studios who, you know, mortgage their houses to make these games happen. And you think, oh, well, it was only a $15 game. But you've got 10 people that say, oh, it was only a $15 game. Now how much was it?
It's $150
you know?
Bucks right
it
there.
It adds up really quickly.
I've even gotten into arguments online and people are like, oh, well, you review games, so you get free games anyway. You're stealing from developers. First off, if I don't get a game, I buy it because I'm not an asshole. Mm-hmm. Two, I'm not stealing a game from a developer. They are giving me a game code with the purpose of playing and reviewing it to talk to you motherfuckers about it.
Right, because companies view that as marketing. They're not losing out because they're going to get a return on investment.
Yeah.
They give, you know, you a $15 game to review, but they hope that that turns into, you know, even three or four people buying it. That's a return on investment that they can count on. Mm-hmm. Where, you know, same with a giveaway. Yes, they'll give us giveaway codes and we distribute those, but they expect people who didn't win the giveaway, there's a chance they might go and buy the game anyway just because they were hyped up for it.
Yeah. Or even so with the review codes we get, how many times do I get a game for review and I give to either you or I'll give to Chris or I'll give to Purnell or I used to give to you, CJ? I would give games to you guys and then buy it myself because I didn't feel I had the time to review it, but I still want to support the game.
Yeah.
I have
that happens a lot.
I have like over 1500 games installed on my Xbox. And yes, I'm sure a chunk of those are review codes, but hundreds of them are paid.
Yeah.
Like, everything I have is legit. I'm not game sharing. I'm, I don't know.
Even I cracked the joke that I don't ever buy anything, but it's not true. I've got around 530 games on my console.
Yeah,
but
you've only won about like 520 before. Those.
Yeah, but you know, maybe 521.
You bought a solid dozen games.
But I do have a few that I bought, or I'll buy DLC for a game that I reviewed. So, like, you gave me Homefront when we just recently did Homefront. You gave me that for review. And after I beat it and I did the review, the DLC was on sale the next week. And you know what I did? I whipped out my fucking PayPal account and I bought the DLC.
Let me whip this out.
Yeah, I whipped it out. Like, I pretended like I had a penis, but it was a PayPal card. And I bought DLC.
That's so fucking hot. Oh my God, that's so hot.
This show just got X-rated real fast.
It's always been X-rated.
Just got X-rated. The funny thing, like, I don't know how accurate any of these numbers could be, but a while back we did, I think it was a Digirati, like, massive game bundle giveaway on Gleam of, like, every game from Digirati. And a lot of that stuff was some of their older titles. And I was informed, I forget who it was at Digirati, they told me, like, a week or two after our drawing was done, they saw minor increases in sales across all of their legacy titles on Xbox.
Well, that's awesome.
So just doing a giveaway, even if they sell, like, two or three copies that they might not have sold before, I feel like we helped.
Yeah.
So... game sharing is bad. Buy shit, kids. Buy your own shit.
Speaking of which, Joe, after the show, send me your password so I can log in.
Yeah, you could blow me. Some other news this week, because there is still plenty more to talk about. There was a Mega Man 30th anniversary event. Either of you watch this?
Nope.
No, but I did see the announcement about it.
I didn't even know that was a thing. Yeah.
Couple of cool announcements. The first thing that they announced was that Mega Man X 1 through 8 will be releasing on Xbox, Switch, and PS4 in 2018.
So I have something to admit.
Hmm.
I thought you said Megatron, and I was thinking Transformers the entire time.
No.
I was like, what kind of Transformers news is coming out?
You dumb son of a bitch. No. But no information on... when they're releasing, how much they're going to be, if they're going to be bundled, if they're going to be individual. I'm sure we'll find out more next year. And then they also mentioned that Mega Man Legacy Collection 1 and 2 are both coming to the Switch with Amiibo support, so that could be fun.
Uh-oh, Amiibos.
No, it's just Amiibo. That's the plural.
Oh, an Amiibo. Sorry.
One of my friends yelled at me because I said Amiibos the one time, and he's like, no, man, it is always lowercase, and there's never an S. It's just Amiibo. Whether it's one Amiibo or 12 Amiibo, it's Amiibo. I'm like, okay, I will remember that. And then the big news from the anniversary event was that in late 2018, Mega Man 11 is coming out. Brand new Mega Man game. Yep, instead of the pixel visuals like Mega Man 9 and 10, they are going with full modern visuals. First time I saw the trailer for it, I thought it looked like Mighty Number 9, of all things.
That's what I thought, too, when I first saw like some of the screen grabs floating across Twitter. And then I was like, oh, I was wrong. But yeah, I thought it was Mighty Number 9 at first.
It's Mega Number Man. But I don't know. I'm kind of up in the air on how I feel about it. I enjoyed the classic visual style of 9 and 10. As long as the game plays well, you know, bring it on. I'm excited to see Mega Man come back. I appreciated that during this whole event, they were doing a little pixelated history of Mega Man where they would show like times and dates of like, you know, 2002, this game came out. 2003, this game came out. And then it was like 2012, Mega Man Zero for the iOS came out, or X-Over came out for mobile, which was an awful game. And then it was just a bunch of empty years of nothing. It was like 5 years of just no news, no releases. He's just been dead and ignored. So
it's good to see it be picked back up then. That we're in a phase where everything old is new again. And so it's neat to see games that, you know, I played as a kid making full-fledged comebacks so that I can show them my kid's face and go, here, play something cool for a change.
Yeah. And then I'm sure next week on the show, we're going to have a shitload of news to talk about, because later on tonight, we are recording Thursday night, later on tonight, the Game Awards are going on, and there's supposed to be some big announcements going on. There are some rumors that are coming out, so let's address a handful of those. I'm not sure if they're all game show, you know, Game Awards related or not, but this is just some rumors and news from the past week. Bandai Namco is holding their own event on December 15th and will supposedly be showing off 5 unannounced titles. There was a follow-up tweet that has since been deleted that said one of those 5 games will be a remastered version of the original Dark Souls for Xbox One, PS4, and Switch.
Interesting. The game's not that wildly old, but then again, you see that all the time now.
So yeah.
Wait, isn't the Dark Souls is backward compatible?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
I mean, PlayStation 4 people still can't play it, so, I mean...
Yeah, and Nintendo can't play any of them, so it's cool for them, too.
I would have preferred if they did maybe Demon's Souls and maybe was able to make that cross-platform, since they just shut down the servers for the original.
I don't think Demon's Souls is ever going to show up because it was published by Sony.
Oh, that's unfortunate. Sony ruins everything.
They really do. speaking of leaks, a new Scribblenauts was supposedly outed by the Taiwanese ratings board. It's called Scribblenauts Showdown, coming from Fifth Cell and Warner Brothers, and is listed for the Switch as expected, as well as Xbox and PS4. So that could be interesting as well. That's pretty
fucking cool. Scribblenauts, that was a big thing a long time ago.
Yeah. Always a DS game, and I think they had a Wii outing, so it'll be interesting to see it show up on other systems, see how it works.
Mm-hmm.
And then a Korean ratings board has apparently leaked Assassin's Creed Rogue HD for Xbox One and PS4.
I mean, we all saw this coming, but why name it HD? It's just a port. It's not old enough to be an HD.
They did that with Liberation, though, when they ported it from Vita to Xbox and stuff. It's Assassin's Creed Liberation HD.
To be fair, I don't think the Vita could do HD.
Yeah, that was like a true HD, HD-ified.
But they, yeah, but the 360, I mean, it still wasn't like... jumping a huge...
Call it 4K. Then it would make sense.
Well, we don't know if the PS4 would be able to handle it at 4K.
You're not wrong.
I mean, I'm sure the X could. Huh?
Because I'm pretty excited about that, though, because I only got to play, like, the first few missions of Rogue. We rented it, like, just a couple days for the 360, just a couple days before we got the 1. And so because we were switching to the 1, I didn't just outright buy it, and I never got to finish it. It's one of the few Assassin's Creed that I haven't actually got to go all the way through. So
it would make all of the waiting I've done on purchasing it worth it if it does come to Xbox One, because then I don't have to buy the 360 version ever.
Like, I was secretly just hoping for the 360 version to go backward compatible and be
game-compatible. It has been.
Rogue, it is.
Well, to be games with gold, though.
Oh. You're kind of surprised so it hasn't cheap. Been. Stop stealing from developers.
I know.
They kept doing Brotherhood and Revelations, and it's like, those ones were available in the in that fucking, like, ACA, the fucking Chronicles thingy, or whatever the hell they called it, the collection.
No.
It's like, stop doing those. Give me Rogue and Liberations HD. Those are the two that I'd be happy with.
I would love to see Liberation HD become backward compatible. I think that's the only one that's not playable on the Xbox One.
At this point, so. That might be the case, yeah, which is ridiculous, because that one's not available. I want to play that one.
Well, maybe if Rogue HD is a thing, maybe Liberation will be included.
HD.
Yeah, HDX. What would they call it at this point?
Double.
Omega. EX then plus Alpha.
Yeah, I was about to start. Super Mega Ultra.
enough leaks. How about some official news? Capcom just today announced the Devil May Cry HD collection is getting HD collectified once again and coming to Xbox One, PS4, and Steam March 13th.
That's kind of funny. So, the HD collection is HD-er.
It's getting HD. And you know what? The terrible part was I was like, even though I have the HD collection for the 360 sitting on my shelf.
I never did buy it, but it gets cheap.
I have to admit, Devil May Cry is my favorite game series ever. My dog's name is Dante. Devil May Cry is my favorite thing in the world.
I've never really heard anybody say that before. Like, I've heard people like it. I've never heard anybody say it's their favorite.
I shit you not. It is. Like, I even played it on PlayStation back in the day.
Wow.
Oh, that's
seriously
weird.
That's so weird for me to say.
It's like spotting a fucking unicorn.
I feel dirty.
Did you get a PS2 just to play Devil May Cry?
Yeah.
Damn.
What else was she going to play? Killzone?
I don't know. I shit on the PS4 a lot, but the PS2 had an amazing lineup of games. Like, I will
was
never.
Was Parasite Eve on the PlayStation 2?
One.
I played that too.
But it was playable on the PS2 because back in the day, Sony used to believe in backward compatibility.
and without making you buy them multiple times.
Yeah,
but seriously. I did. I played. I feel like I played it on the PlayStation 2, but it may have been a PlayStation 1 game. But yeah, I played Parasite Eve. Like, I fucking loved those games. And Devil May Cry has always stuck with me as one of my favorites. So even though I already have the HD remaster for 360, and I saw the announcement today, and I was just like, I might pee myself with glee.
Well, I guess I'm buying those again, huh?
Glee pee. I'll buy them again.
The
here's
good
the
news.
Other thing, since you mentioned the rumor part.
Well, I was going to say, before we go on to the other rumor, which I know we're all going to get to, good news with the HD collection, when it releases March 13th, only $30 for all three games.
Yeah.
Not bad.
And
I'm pretty sure I paid $60 last time.
Possibly. But all of these rumors are circulating around even bigger rumors for an alleged Devil May Cry 5 reveal.
Please.
I've heard a lot of mixed things. I don't know what is accurate, what is not accurate, because I'm clearly not big enough in the industry to know anything. But the potential bad news is some of the rumors are saying it might be a PS4 exclusive.
I'm hoping against that because they're doing the remaster for all. Yeah.
I was going to say, on the plus side.
That's where I'm crossing my fingers.
On the plus side, since Street Fighter V released as a PS4 exclusive, everybody has made sure to let Capcom know that they're fucking tired of exclusives. And now even Dead Rising 4, which was partially funded by Microsoft and was a 1-year exclusive on Xbox One, and that is now officially on PS4. There were rumors of Marvel vs. Capcom was going to be a PS4 exclusive, and that wasn't. So fingers crossed, like, these are just, maybe the PS4 version will get an exclusive bonus, or like a timed bonus, or maybe it'll be a timed exclusive, who knows. If Sony outright buys a full-on exclusive for Devil May Cry 5, I might be done with Capcom.
I'll be crushed. I will be absolutely in a hole, heartbroken.
It's okay. What they're going to do is they're just going to have an exclusive strike in Devil May Cry 5. And in a year, that'll come to Xbox.
Then after a year, I'll be like, oh, well, the agreement was extended another year. Yeah, fingers crossed Capcom is done with this exclusive shit. That'd I still nice. Wish they would just move on to Street Fighter 6 instead of all these arcade editions, just so that more people could play the fucking game. Street Fighter 5 in a numbered variety will never appear on any other console. Fuck you, Capcom. You said the same shit about Resident Evil 4, and we know that came out on everything.
It's literally on every console on the face of the earth.
Close to it.
Money talks, and if if they think enough people will buy it more than what PlayStation's willing to pony up for it, then this might.
It just, it really comes down to the fact that I am sick of Sony buying every exclusive.
Like, it's pretty shitty.
They have a good first party company, like a group of first party studios. They don't need to buy exclusives. Let the games come out everywhere. You have a good first party division making great games. Xbox is slipping there. Like, they need better first party games. They need better first party releases. You're beating them there. Stop buying third party exclusives because you don't need them. You're just pissing off everybody. Like, when even PlayStation fans are pissed about the fact that they're still getting, like, Destiny content exclusive, that's a problem. When the people getting the content are like, knock it the fuck off, this is stupid, stop. What else?
That's a good point. But even, yeah, even PlayStation fans are just like, okay, this is a little absurd now.
Yeah. Oh, that stuff is ridiculous because you're paying the same price for the same game. You should get all the same things.
Yeah. Well, that was like Sniper Ghost Warrior 3 had that hitch where Xbox was left out of something.
Oh,
with
the season pass edition.
Oh, yeah. Which wound up being free anyway, and anybody can download it at any point.
Yeah.
But it no way does a season pass
going
cost
to be that
anything.
Way. It was going to be, it was originally intended to be extra on Xbox.
Yeah.
So it was a shitty way to go about it.
Speaking of Sniper 3, I loved around Black Friday, GameStop was doing an advertisement with Sniper 3, and they're like, exclusive at GameStop, get the season pass included for free. I'm like, you know those are launch editions that are just clogging up your warehouse, right? Don't lie to
That's
us.
That's ridiculous.
Don't lie to us, GameStop. Oh, well, they lie to us anyway.
Yeah, they do.
You know, I shit on PS4 a lot. Let's say something positive about them. PS4 worldwide sales are officially over 70 million consoles.
That's
that is ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
And only seven of them are me.
That's the reason you only have filed exclusives.
Just think about it, Joe. You own 0.00001% of their entire business.
They have also sold 2 million PSVR units. So I'm
That's
sure
pretty decent.
It's great when you look at VR numbers, but I would assume Sony would like to see a little bit of a higher attach rate given their 70 million systems and only 2 million VRs out there.
Yeah, that's true. You don't have a high percentage there.
Yeah.
That is kind of what I would expect, though. It always seems like those kind of peripherals, like the Kinect, they just really struggle to take off. And I think part of it's because they have such a specific development process that's different from just developing a base game. And so therefore you have extra costs and stuff that it's more difficult for an indie studio to come in and make a really cool Smash game without having some kind of extra backup funding or something for that.
Yeah, I don't know. A little bit more news. Red Barrels has announced that they're going to be working on a new project that is not yet Outlast 3. And there will also not be DLC for Outlast 2. They said when they made the original game, they made it with some DLC in mind. But with the second one, they felt that it was just good as it is. So it looks like there will not be any DLC for Outlast 2. And a sequel for Outlast 3 could happen, but not right now. On the bright side, for people who want more Outlast, 1 and 2 are coming to the Switch.
That's an interesting place for it.
So you can shit yourself on the go.
Shit yourself on the toilet.
Perfect place to play Outlast.
Pretty much, yeah.
Oh my just god, this is so scary. I might just piss my toilet. last bit of news that I have is that Ubisoft has announced delays for 3 games.
Oh boy.
Yeah, 3 games. The first is The Crew 2.
Mm-hmm.
The second is Far Cry 5. And mm-hmm. the third is an unannounced title.
Why do they even bother announcing that there's a delay for a title that's not announced?
They did also announce that there's a new Tomb Raider coming.
Oh, did All they? Right.
Yeah,
they did.
I think that's kind there's of been expected for a while.
Yeah. So there is a new Tomb Raider coming. They also said that there would be like a very short lapse between when it's announced and when it's playable.
Interesting.
That was their big hullabaloo about it. Like they didn't want to give, you know, any kind of major official announcement, but
I found the announcement. I'll just read it. Square Enix is excited to share some big news with you next year. Honestly, we wish we could share it with you right now, but we're taking a new approach this time. A new Tomb Raider game is coming. Driven by our goal of putting our fans first, we want you to know that it won't be very long between the official reveal and when you can play. Our journey together will begin with a major event in 2018. We can't wait to take you on Lara Croft's defining adventure. So E3 reveal comes out next fall.
Yeah, probably. That's which a pretty stage quick turnaround from Rise of the Tomb Raider. Wasn't too long ago. I mean,
2 years, wasn't it?
Oh wow, it was 2015. For some reason, I was thinking it's 2016. It still feels like such a new game.
Well, it feels new because it came out last Christmas on PS4.
Oh,
another one of those year exclusive things.
Hopefully they don't do that this time. It's just all at once.
Either come out everywhere or stop exclusive shit.
I mean, what?
So should we take guesses? Will it be announced at a Square Enix event, or will it come out on a Microsoft's E3 show, Sony's E3 show, or are they going to fuck with us and just bring it out for the Switch?
Are there any Tomb Raider games on the Switch?
Not yet.
Wouldn't be surprised if they announced, like, Definitive Edition or Rise of the Tomb Raider would come to it.
I wouldn't be shocked either. I mean, it was a 360 game.
Yeah, the reboot could very easily make it to the Switch.
No. Either way, 2018 is looking pretty solid for games.
So how long is Far Cry 5 delayed then? Until fall?
Let me see here.
No, just a month.
Oh, yeah.
Just from until March.
March 27th from February 27th. The Crew 2... was originally March 16th, and it is now just the first half of fiscal year 2018 to 2019.
That's never a good sign, because that's just like South Park got hit with that.
Yeah.
And then I was like, no, it's actually December.
and then it says, in addition, one of the three unannounced franchise games initially planned for release in fiscal 2018 and 19 will now be released fiscal 2019 to 20. So hell of a delay on whatever that was.
Yeah, it's like, why even mention it?
Who knows? But any news that y'alls want to talk about?
I haven't been paying attention to much news, so I don't really have much to say.
I just wanted to talk about Devil May Cry, so I'm good now.
Do you want to say anything else about Devil May Cry?
That game's so good.
What did you think of DMC?
I didn't play that one yet because I was protesting because Dante didn't have white hair.
What the fuck?
It's on Game Pass, though, and my Game Pass code is going to run out, like, in 2 or 3 weeks, so I should probably play it.
Yeah, that's your homework for next week, because I'm sure you'll be on next week. You're on every week anymore.
I am. I have no life. I'm here.
So that's your homework.
Yay.
I guess the only other news I would want to bring up is that the Rock Band DLC for this week is fucking awesome.
Oh boy, time for him to get his nerd on.
Dude, I was so, like, out of the entire year, I might be the most excited about the DLC from this week with Foo Fighters Run, Queens of the Stone Age the Way You Used To, and Stone Sour Song 3. It's like three of the best modern rock songs of the year all together. One shot. Fuck yeah.
Well, that's awesome.
It is awesome, and that's why
I know any of those songs.
How don't you know any of those songs?
To be fair, I already don't remember them.
Jesus Christ. So good having you back on the show, CJ.
Hey, I have some news.
What?
The Surge got a DLC.
The Surge did get some new DLC, and we'll be talking about that in a little bit, because there's no way you're going first and ducking out, motherfucker.
What do you mean? I didn't plan on doing that.
Sure.
I really didn't.
But we might as well jump into the reviews, and the first game to talk about this week is called A Hat in Time, developed and published by Gears for Breakfast. It released December 6th on Xbox One and PS4 for $29.99. Play is a tiny space-traveling girl with a big top hat. Her adventure is halted when all of her fuel, the timepieces, is lost and scattered across a nearby planet. Hat Kid must now jump, fight, and stitch new hats to make her way into every nook and cranny of this new world in order to restore her fuel and resume her journey. This is a 3D action platformer, so we will get this out of the way right off the bat. The camera's bad.
Camera's balls.
The camera, it's serviceable most of the time, and then there's other times that just make me want to punch a kitten, and I'm glad that my cats are all grown and no longer officially kittens, so I don't have to punch any of my own cats. But it's the curse of 3D platformers. I don't think any 3D platformers have a great camera. This one is serviceable. It allows me to play. There's only a handful of times that it gets stuck behind things and judders and shakes.
You can actually change some of the set. Like, you can change how close to you and how far away it is, and like how smooth the movement of it is. But I didn't find it helped at all.
Yeah, it has. It feels like the options are there as a placebo. Like, hey, yeah, you like set it to far, and then when I would go back to the game, it would still be directly inside my asshole.
Yeah. It just wants to make you feel like you're making a difference.
Yeah. I'm helping. But the camera out of the way, this game is fucking fantastic. Beautiful, colorful game. A handful of different worlds. You go into the worlds. They're very much kind of like Mario 64, where it's just an open area with multiple different things you can do. There's different variants of each stage as well, depending on which act of the chapter that you're in. Like, the same cityscape that you might be in at the very beginning, later on, it'll be filled with lava because there's, for some reason, this town has water faucets that tap a fucking volcano that just fill the entire town with molten lava.
That's because the town's populated by mafia, and mafia is not particularly known for being the most intelligent.
Very true. Very true. As you progress through the game, there's different collectibles you could get that are different styles of yarn. And when you get enough of them, you can craft different hats for your character because it's a hat in time. Each of the different hats in the game give you different abilities, whether it's using the button to show you kind of where you're supposed to go with, you know, whatever active quest you're on, or they'll make you sprint. You can do like a ground pound. You could use, what the hell does she fill up to blow things up? It's just a vial of something.
It's like she makes a potion when she has the witch's hat, and it's
a jar
explosive.
Of pee.
Yeah, so it's the little potion that she shakes up and throws at whatever you're, you know, aiming at.
Yeah, but basically swap hats so you could accomplish different things, find different things, collect the timepiece and move on. There's different hidden time rifts, which are kind of like the special stages in Super Mario Brothers. Mario Galaxy, that would have the special stages. They're just more hardcore style platforming segments that you have to go through.
Kind of like Ginger had.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, exactly like those in Ginger. But in order to get to those, you'll get like a snapshot of where the rift is in the world, and then you have to go into the appropriate world and find that rift to get into it to actually get to the bonus stage.
Yeah.
Like, you can't just click on the bonus stage and go straight to it.
Which I kind of enjoyed. When I was on the level select, I went over to one of them, and it just showed me, like, hey, this is an area in the level. Go find it your damn self. I'm like, well, yeah, I guess I will. And then I did. And then I beat it, and I felt good. I love the different worlds in the game. There are some, I don't know, some letdown stages in the second world. Is kind of like a movie based area, and the second stage in there is like a stealth mission for some reason.
Mm-hmm.
And I was not a fan of that at all. I just want to run through things and jump on things and collect things. I wish stealth missions would stay in stealth games. Like,
it is funny, yeah, though, when you get fined for owl harassment. Like, you just rack up this great big tab, like, every time you break something, or it pops up with what your fine is and some arbitrary number. That was hilarious. I'm easily amused, though, and I was just like, I'm going to harass all the owls, and I did, and I finished with like a $4 million fine.
Nice.
Yeah, I was kind of proud. I wish there had been an achievement for that. That was a missed opportunity.
It was.
Like, there's an achievement for getting through it without being caught at all, but fuck that. I would have rather had an achievement for just harassing as many owls and penguins as possible.
Rack up $10 million mm-hmm. in fees.
That would have been a real challenge.
That would have been fun. It is a really, really funny game, though. That ties into the humor. Really funny game. Voice acting, for the most part, is pretty fantastic. I'm sure some people out there will be annoyed at the fact that JonTron is a character in the game.
I've heard of this before because of that.
He's not the most popular person in the world anymore, but he paid for it on Kickstarter, so I guess they had to keep him in. Other than that, though, holy shit, I adore this game so much. There's so much to do. It is a beautiful, colorful game. If you could get around the camera issues and don't mind a stealth mission every now and then, I say for $30, it's a buy it. What do you think, Cole? Because I know you played it as well.
I agree with you. I want to say, though, like, there's a lot of aspects of the game that come off like it's kid-friendly, but the story, not so much. Like, you run into a secondary character named Mustache Girl, and, like, when you first start, you take on the mafia and you just bop them on the head and they poof or whatever. Some of them you hit and they're just like blow up people to make this place look populated. And it just makes like squeaky noises. But then after you get to a point where you have to take on the mafia boss, and Mustache Girl is all like, okay, we're going to blow them all into smithereens and then put their pieces into jars. And you're just like, that got dark real fast. That was not. And then later on, the mafia boss you defeat, he comes back to you as pieces in a jar because Mustache Girl got to him. And I was just like, oh, I'm glad I didn't get distracted and let the kids play this one.
I really think that might be something it would just go over the heads of a lot of kids.
You can set it to skip like the cutscenes and that dialogue and stuff. It's just a menu option. So yeah. Like if you're letting,
I think that's more for speedrunners though.
Yeah, but I would recommend it for the kid. Like it's as far as play goes, it's not even violent or gory or anything, but whoa, Mustache Girl just wants to put remains in jars. And she's a little harsh.
I don't know. I didn't think it was that bad. I really think it was just that kind of humor that adults will get, but kids won't. Like, go back and watch Rocko's Modern Life.
Yeah.
As a kid, we thought that was funny and innocent and cute. And if you were a parent watching that shit, you're like, what the fuck are my kids watching?
Yeah, I look back at Ren and Stimpy and Rocko's Modern Life. I was like, I can't believe my parents let me watch that.
So I wouldn't hold that against them. I think that's just something for adults to get a kick out of, and kids will be just be like, he's in a jar. And they won't think that he was ripped into violent, bloody pieces and shoved piece by piece. That's your fault, Cole. You're fucked up.
You too, because like the very beginning, the first thing you do, of course, when you start a new game is just like start clicking all the shit just to see what it does, right? And like I went to her closet in her room. Did you click the closet?
Mm-hmm.
The closet says, or she says, oh, well, I only wear one outfit, so there's a lot of room in here for skeletons.
Because like, it's skeletons in your closet. Oh, I have naughty secrets.
I got dark quick. I wasn't ready.
I don't see a problem with kids playing it. I really don't.
But I just was more just like, oh, I am a mom, so I am a little more aware of those kind of things. And like, I have really strict rules when it comes to the kids and what they play. If I let them play it, I would probably just like tick off the cutscenes or whatever.
Sorry, children. You are not allowed to play A Hat in Time. Now mommy's going to go play some more of The Division and Headshot motherfuckers.
Yeah. Oh, they're not allowed to play that shit either, so at least I'm consistent.
I learned it from you, Mom. I found you playing a T-rated game. How dare you? Anyway, speaking of family-friendly entertainment, the next game to talk about is called Soma, developed and published by Frictional Games, released December 1st on Xbox One for $29.99. The radio is dead, food is running out, and the machines have started to think they are people. Underwater facility Pathos 2 has suffered an intolerable isolation. We're going to have to make some tough decisions. What can be done? What makes sense? What is left to fight for? Cole, tell me about Soma.
Holy fuck, there was a spoiler alert in that.
That's the description. So.
Whoa. Well, I guess, I don't know. It makes sense in hindsight, but during the game, you're not thinking of it in that aspect. This game is absolutely amazing. Also, not at all family friendly. So you should probably ignore Joe on that part. But Jesus Christ, this game was good. You hear people say, oh, this is a good game. You're going to like someone. And I go, okay. Because 9 times out of 10, I'm just like, it was all right. Yeah, I didn't break my neck. No, I broke my neck over this one. This one's good. I really enjoyed Soma. First off, it has a little controversy because there are two ways to play. You can either play in safe mode or you can play in normal. I'm a pussy and I played in safe mode. But I did go back.
You're the worst kind of person.
I know. But, well, I wanted to just, I have shiny object syndrome when it comes to these kind of games. And I like to just explore and look at the kind of, at the details and stuff. There is a lot of really interesting shit that you would very easily miss if you were playing this on normal and just like trying to survive. So I did go back and replay some of it on normal just to figure out how the monsters worked and stuff when they weren't, you know, just standing there watching you do whatever you wanted to do.
We should probably also point out the safe mode is new for the Xbox release. This game came out, I think, 2 years ago on PS4. And one of the complaints of the game was that it felt there was so much to do, but people couldn't do anything because they had the fear of being caught and fear of losing progress. And people wanted a way to just be able to explore and not have the pressure of losing.
I think it was an incredibly good idea. Because like I said, there was shit that I would have never failed.
I hear the monster.
That I would have, yeah.
So, do the achievements work in both modes?
Yes.
Oh, boy.
You can complete the game in safe mode and never have to get fucked up by a monster. I would like to add, though, that even though I say you will never get fucked up by a monster, it's still possible to die. There are some ways to die, even though the monsters won't outright attack you. And I don't know if maybe I had a glitch or something, but one of the later levels, there are some moments when you have to go into the open ocean to get from one area to another. And the monsters weren't attacking me for the most part. In this later mission, there's like sharks and angelfish, or not angelfish, but anglerfish, that will attack you if you're in normal mode. I was on safe mode, and I definitely got attacked by an anglerfish when I got too close to it. Now, the sharks and the other things, they were leaving me alone. But I managed to piss off an anglerfish, and he hurt my feels. Didn't kill me, but he hurt my feels. And I did die because I walked off a cliff.
So. Well, they can't save you from gravity.
Yeah, can't save you from your own shit. Some of these levels are just insanely dark. And you do have a flashlight at some points, but it's not always available. And so, especially in the later levels when you're wandering around in the ocean and you've got nothing but, you know, a few light markers or glow sticks marking your path, it's really easy to just wander off and go pew, and fall off a cliff like I did about 97 times. So, but other than that, don't get shiny object syndrome. Don't go falling off cliffs. You'll be fine. I also died because I fell off a ladder from really far.
God. Because, so proud of you.
I have moments. I was like, oh, what's down there?
A true gaming genius.
So proud of you.
How did you start reviewing games?
Now we see why I played it on safe mode, because I don't need monsters when I worry about my own stupidity.
Were you the one that was playing the Cuphead tutorial?
No. I reviewed Cuphead, and I did just fine.
I beat the tutorial in only 3 hours.
I'm a master. But the reality is like, I get really distracted looking at little details, and Soma is just absolutely full of them that I just would do something stupid and walk off a ledge. And I do that in literally every game I play. But
you do that one game that we'll be talking about that later. Wink, wink.
But I really just, I have a tendency to get caught up in the details. That's what made safe mode so good. In one of the beginning sections, you're in, the main character, his name is Simon. You're in Simon's apartment. And I remember playing Gone Home with the commentary, and they were like, we didn't have any shoes anywhere in the house, because if we had just one pair, you'd wonder where everybody else's shoes were. And it stood out to me because I was just exploring the apartment and there were shoes. And I was like, oh, they actually put in his shoes. Simon has shoes in his apartment. And like, the more you explored, like, oh, you could open a drawer and here's a comb and there's toothpaste. And it was legitimately a lived-in environment. And this was spanned across the entirety of the game. So even once you go from being in Simon's apartment to being in the Paphos laboratories and the living quarters, they genuinely felt like lived in areas. And you, when you were just exploring, you just wanted to take your time and look at the pictures and try to understand the people that these stories had been built around and had lived in these areas and lived on this ship and in these different, communities scattered across the ocean. I guess I should probably go back and explain the whole. Oh my. I'm talking about the communities across the ocean. I got sidetracked, didn't I?
A smidge.
A little bit. I did a thing.
Very much so.
But there's the premise originally begins with Simon, who I mentioned before I got sidetracked.
Shoe man, yes.
He shoes. Simon has been in a car crash, an accident, and he has suffered brain damage, and he does not have long to live.
Okay, so you could say he's gone from having shoes to having issues.
Indeed. I'm not going to repeat that. You should be ashamed. But he is undergoing an experimental treatment to try to save his brain, essentially. And so they are going to first make a scan of his brain. Following the scan, no, it was not. following the scan, he wakes up on the Paphos ship, and he's absolutely clueless as to why he's there, how he got there. The year has jumped from being 2015 to 2104. There has been a cosmic event where a comet has hit the Earth and destroyed all life except for those who were the researchers who were living on Paphos 2. The reason they survived is because they're so deep in the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
Some of those researchers, one in particular, had attempted to create brain scans of all of her crewmates and upload those onto what was called an ARC. And her goal was to shoot the ARC into outer space where it would survive for all eternity because it would be self-contained. Everybody on it was in a digital space. And, you know, it would use solar power to maintain its power supply and all of that. So the people that were on Paphos were in danger of, they're the last of humanity, and they're in danger because they're running out of food and supplies, and, you know, the rest of humanity is gone. They have no help. They're just stuck at the bottom of the ocean. So this was her goal, to save what was left of humanity. And it is up to Simon to help her carry on that goal, but he discovers that not everything is as it appears And like you said in the spoiler of the description, you know, there are sentient robots, and there is, you know, a very heavy sci-fi vibe going on into everything that has occurred. And Simon, who, you know, has just woke up in 2104, is completely oblivious to how humanity got that way anyway. So he is faced with kind of an existential crisis of, you know, is this really humanity? Are we really alive? And the decisions that you make as a player kind of affects how you view the answers to that, if they're even answers. They kind of open up more questions than not, but it's a really complicated, intricate story. It's really incredibly well done. The ending of it will just leave you with your jaw dropped. You will not expect the way it goes. And so there's a lot of, you know, ambience and everything to telling this story. And a lot of the tiny details, if you're playing it in normal mode, you're going to miss them. You really are. Like, it just, from pictures and backstories of, you know, these people that you're trying to save, you can connect with them if you're not being chased by light monsters who are making your screen glitch.
So I guess the only question left is monster got me. Go figure. I don't talk for 3 minutes and my throat gums. The only question left, $30, your verdict.
Please buy this game. It is amazing.
Yes, and then maybe next time Frictional Games won't wait 2 years to bring it to our platform.
Please. I will say it was definitely worth the wait. Now that review has been 45 minutes long.
That was a long opinion.
That was a very, very long one.
Kind of got distracted a bit there, too.
Sometimes I have things I want to say, and I didn't even make notes because it would have been worse if I actually had something reminding me of what I wanted to say. So please buy this game. Don't make it end up like another Narcosis. It was really damn good to buy this and Narcosis and get your under the ocean scare on. Fear Peak.
Under the sea.
Yeah.
Under the sea. Anyway, next up to talk about is called The Surge, A Walk in the Park, developed by Deck 13, published by Focus Home Interactive, released December 5th on Xbox One, PC, and PS4, $14.99. Creo World is an amusement park built by Creo for its employees and their families. Forget your cravings for cotton candy, though. Creo World was not spared from the disaster. The entire park is a deadly trap, where roaming rescue teams have gone insane and robotic mascots patrol freely, patiently waiting for new visitors to welcome. As I'm sure you can tell, this is DLC for The Surge. CJ, since you covered The Surge, I figured this would be a good opportunity to get your dumbass back on the show. And as we all regret that decision, tell us, what did you think of A Walk in the Park?
Well, A Walk in the Park isn't exactly a walk in the park.
You've waited 2 hours to say that, didn't you?
No, it actually just came up to my head right now as I was reading the name. I was Life. Like, that works. No, I think the name was purposely made like that, so don't even. The first thing I got to say is the most obvious part of the DLC. It looks incredible. The biggest problem I had with The Surge is that it was a lot of the same environments. There wasn't a whole lot of variety in the way it looked. It was very drab and dreary. This completely throws all of that away and creates a very unique atmosphere with roller coasters. It's a whole fucking amusement park, obviously. And it's just, it's crazy, colorful, it's fun. It has mascots that are way too frequent for a real amusement park. They'd be paying out the ass to have that many mechanical little bots walking around. Like, there's legitimately one every 5 feet. Pretty much.
Nice.
So, plenty of enemies to fight all the time. The enemies in the DLC, at least so far, don't seem very difficult. They swamp you because there's a lot of them. So rather than the way a lot of the surges worked, where you can kind of just pin on one enemy and take them out and then continue, this one, it's like, a lot of the times you're going to run into two or three enemies. Sometimes even more than that. Like, there's this.
So this is more crowd control than one-on-one fighting.
Which is something that if you play the Surge a lot, you're probably not very used to, even still. Because it's just, that's not the way most of that game was played. And so coming into this is like, whoa, this is completely different, and I have to learn new strategies to win. And your boy did not learn new strategies and kept dying.
Shocking.
Wait. You made fun of me for falling off of the ladder, but you went and died too?
Yes, but not from a ladder. I was killed by something in the Surge, which is basically Dark Souls in an amusement park. So don't even. I'm still decent at the game, though. I was able to hold my own for a little bit of it. There was a couple of enemies that were much stronger than I expected. There was these like giant like red robot things, and I didn't realize how powerful they were. And then they killed me in one hit, and I was like, "Well, I don't like you." Considering the mascots don't do that much, as long as you don't let them all gang up on you at once. There's this like group of mascots called the Popcorn Parade, and you get an achievement for killing them, but it's like four of them right next to each other that you gotta kill at once. It's that one's a little brutal. They just they'll surround you and then keep hitting you, and you have to wait a few seconds between using your healing charges, so you'll die very quickly if you get surrounded in this DLC.
Nice.
A fun part, those mascot parts, like the heads for the mascots, you can actually collect those and then craft them yourself. And so you can you can walk around with a giant soda can on your head, or
oh my god,
or a giant donut. Yeah.
Now I know what I'm doing later on tonight.
There's an achievement for crafting all four different mascot heads.
Yeah.
So it's something that I definitely will be doing as well. I think I've collected three of the four, only because I didn't realize that was a thing you could do until after I finally targeted one of their heads. And I was like, oh boy, I can actually collect them.
Now, here's a question for you. I know a lot of people, when the Hot Wheels expansion came to Forza Horizon 3, people bought the game brand new thinking that they could go right to Hot Wheels, not knowing that there was some intro sections you had to go through, and you had to do like some races, and you had to open up your first location in the game. How long into the Surge can you get to this new content, or is it available from the beginning at a menu, or how does it work?
You have to access it in an already started game unless you, I believe unless you're in the new game plus, which spoiler alert, I'm not.
Shocking.
I was just in the regular version, and in the regular version, you have to get past the, tutorial area or the first mission, whatever you want to call it. You got to beat the first boss and go into the second area. And then from there, you're going to meet, you're going to have to travel quite a bit through the second area until you meet this girl that gives you like a side quest to get a staff. Once you find her, just further down the stairs, will be a train that you can get on, and you can start the first part of the DLC. The second part of the DLC is activated in some place. I don't remember the name, but I do not remember, how to get there because I don't remember the name. So
that's cool that they integrate it into the game instead of, you know, a lot of DLCs. It'll be like just from the main menu, select campaign. Oh, let me do the new DLC that isn't linked at all. So it's cool that they worked it into the game.
Yeah, in a way they did. I mean, as far as storyline goes, I believe there's nothing to do with each other. But as far as like how to access it, yeah, you actually have to access it through a train system in the game. Which, I mean, if you've already beaten the game and you want to go back, you can. You'll probably go through it very easily because the more you've done, the easier it'll be. There's no time telling for how long it'll take you to get there because for every player, it's going to be different. You might defeat the first boss within a few tries. It might take you a few hours to beat the first boss.
Now, there's some people out there who can spend 10 hours of the game just trying to defeat the, what the hell is that boss in the first area? That, like, wrecker machine?
Oh, I remember those things. Those things weren't fun. Yeah. But I did eventually beat that one, too. That didn't take as long as the actual boss, but...
I'd probably spend 10 hours just trying to figure out the ladder.
Probably.
Luckily for you, they're all just hold X and then the game does it for you. So I don't think you can mess up a ladder that badly unless you decide to just run off of it.
I mean, so, I have moments.
Good Lord. Anyway, for $15, what are your thoughts on a Walk in the Park DLC for The Surge?
I think that a lot of the price that goes into this is just going to be the environments and how nice it looks. I think there was a lot of time spent in this, and that's why they're charging $15 for it. It doesn't have necessarily like the length to support the $15 price tag, but the work that went into it definitely does. I would say if you're a conscious buyer and you're not sure if it's just worth putting the price, wait for a sale. But if you have the money and you enjoyed the game, then you should just buy it to get more content out of the game you already like.
Plus the fact that it's kind of split into two, so maybe you just suck.
Well, that's possible. Possible. I don't play these types of games on a normal basis, so it takes a getting used to again.
What's your achievement ratio like in The Surge?
I'm going to tell you right now, it's not great. I mean, I can pull it up.
That is like, not right. Shocking at all.
I have 14 of the 57 achievements. And Joe, I don't want to hear it because you have even less.
Oh, I know I have less. I haven't played it. I'm not the one who reviewed it. You did. I played it casually. And I played it mostly on PS4 because I had that version first. But final game for all of us to talk about is called Paladin, developed and published by Pumpkin Games that released December 8th on Xbox One for $9.99. You're Earth's last hero, defend civilization from annihilation, protect the cities, destroy the aliens, and upgrade your fighter. Drive back the vile invading scum and save mankind in this frantic twin-stick shooter. This game is really, really cool. It is a side-scrolling twin-stick shooter. Imagine like the retro Atari game Defender, where you just zip left and right shooting aliens out of the sky. Except it's twin stick, so you could shoot in any direction. Unlike Defender, it doesn't wrap around, so it's just like a set width of the screen. There's going to be three different cities there. Each city has, I want to say, 15,000 people population there. And as the aliens attack the city, of course, the numbers will drop down. In between rounds, if you have enough money, as you kill enemies, they'll drop money for you to pick up that you could use on ship upgrades, or on defense upgrades, or eventually you can just buy people for your population to boost the population. Although there are also some boosts that automatically regenerate people in between each of the rounds. And you just go through the game. There's 40 stages. There's a boss every 10th stage. So after it's not 9 stages and then the 10th is a boss. There's 10 stages, and at the end of the 10th stage, a boss spawns still on the 10th stage. So it's kind of like 44 stages when you think about it.
Wow.
Has a really cool neon color scheme to it. Just black background, bright neon colors, really cool stuff. And CJ, I know you'll love to hear this. The achievements rain on you like candy in this game. The first 5 or 10 minutes I played this game, I think the achievements just went off constantly. Bloop, 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 bloop.
What I see on TA, people rate it a 0 to 1 hour completion.
Yeah. I have all the achievements in the game. I completed level 40. And I even took longer because I wanted to try all the difficulties in the game. So I started on normal. I got to like level 20 something. Before I was kind of getting stuck and I figured I would start over. And then I tried on hard and I went to, God, like 8 or 9. And I'm like, let me try it on easy. And then on easy, I beat the game straight through all the achievements.
So easy must be really easy then.
Completion time, 57 minutes.
Yeah, I saw that on TV. I was like, geez, I might have to pick it up just for that alone and then experience a fun game while I'm at it.
I think a lot of people might hear that you can complete the game in an hour and look at a $10 price tag and be like, that's way too much. Why would I want to spend $10 for just 1,000 achievement points? Because you're not buying the achievement points, you're buying the game. And I think the game
also,
itself.
Also, there's a lot of people that'll spend more than that for 1,000.
I think people have gotten so used to seeing $2 or $4 games come out on Xbox that you could get all the achievements in like an hour. And they expect every easy game has to be stupidly cheap. This is an awesome game made by one guy. Really cool soundtrack, cool visuals, a lot of neat upgrades you could get through the game. For $10, I'm a very, very, very recommend to try it. If you ever see it on a sale, buy it immediately. I think it's a really, really awesome game, and it is definitely worth picking up and getting some easy achievements if you're a fan of those as well.
Oh, boy. You know I'm going to be picking it up eventually.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, you'll be getting that in the morning. But that is it with you guys. I'm going to let y'all go, and I think my friend Tim is going to be coming in to do a couple of reviews. So any final words from the two of you to sum things up?
Fuck CJ.
CJ, your rebuttal.
I shouldn't have come back.
I'm sorry.
No, you're not.
All right, well, CJ and Cole have tagged out and getting the hot tag once again. Tim Ekibis, how are you doing today?
Woo, in over the top rope, clothesline, drop kick, duck, throw a guy over the top rope.
Five knuckle
pulling
shuffle.
Down the straps. Spear a guy in the corner. That's me. Hey, how's it going?
I would love to see you wrestle.
Man, if I may have missed my calling. I could have been, you know, if I had not gone to college, or if I had done wrestling training, like, in Toronto, or wait, no, this wouldn't have been the same time. No, I think it would have, no, it wouldn't have been. Because, like, Edge was, like, training in Toronto, but I think he was already wrestling in WWE by the time I was, like, 18 or whatever. But no, if I had decided to go to Shawn Michaels wrestling school instead of college, then I would have been training with Daniel Bryan.
That would have been amazing.
We graduated the same year. Like, I thought, this is a thing that I thought about once. Because I'm like, oh, he's the same age as me. He graduated in 99. He went straight down to learn how to wrestle. Like, oh, man, I could learn how to wrestle with Daniel Bryan and Shawn Michaels if I'd gone down there.
Well, let's Goddamn. Not. How late was it when DDP got started?
He was super late. He was like 30. He was actually like my age.
So there's still plenty of time for you, Tim.
Yeah, but that was when he started training. Like, he'd already been involved like a bit before then.
Don't let your dreams be dreams.
I guess. Okay. I'll go get in the ring.
Next time you're on the show, I want to hear your progress.
Empire State Wrestling, man.
There you go.
That's the local Fed.
Do you guys get any cool indie stars drop by for those?
They do. They usually get like one, you know, name per show. And, like, usually I look in to see who they get in. They had, like, Pentagon in, like, a few months ago, like, at some point this year, I think.
Nice.
You know, they had Johnny Gargano in before he was WWE. Tony Nese was in.
They had Chad Williams there.
They've had Chris Hero's been there. Let's see. Maybe I should look up right now who's coming on the upcoming shows. Just now, because I have a child and no friends, I can never go.
I know you don't see it, but every time I see Johnny Gargano, I see Chad.
Well, it's the facial hair. Like, it just doesn't add up. Chad never has facial hair. So it doesn't make any sense.
Just, yeah, like, his face, his smiles, his facial expressions. It's just, every time I see him, I'm like, Chad, you're wrestling.
Okay, here you go. Yeah, from a couple of weeks ago, MVP was there. Montel Vontavious Porter, if you remember him.
Oh, yeah. I still loved his entrance theme.
Was there. Dude, he was, yeah, his entrance theme was really good.
And then Matt Sydal, who just stiffed the European or the UK company, TNA had to pay for him.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Evan Bourne.
EC3 was here like a couple months ago. Ethan Carter III.
I knew him and when of course he was Bateman.
Yeah, they've gotten into the trend of having really goofy wrestling show names. Like, dude, where's the wrestle? Based on the classic Dude, Where's My Car? Super Crazy was here, apparently, somewhat recently.
It's all about Super Dragon.
Super Dragon. Yeah, so, you know, they get people in. I just wish that, I don't know, I could go.
I think the one shitty Fed here had, like, Shane Douglas showing up.
Dude, so, like, fucking, I didn't realize this, like, back in October. I only found out, we're going to talk about games eventually. But yeah, I found out, like, 3 days before the show that fucking Ring of Honor was running a show downtown, and, like, the Bullet Club was there. Like, fucking Kenny Omega and the Bucks and Cody Rhodes.
Dang.
And all of them were fucking there.
Did you go?
No, it was sold out.
Fuck.
I know, right?
You can, like, I don't know, call a radio station.
Way too late to do anything. Like, if I had known, like, well ahead of time, I would have been like, yep, tickets, yep.
I'd have been on StubHub right away, like, please, someone sell like, these. $800 front row, fuck it.
Yeah, they only live once. Yeah, they, yeah.
Damn.
Yeah, they, what did they do? They, the Bucks and Omega debuted, like, some, their, like, combo Meltzer driver, One Wing and Angel finisher.
Those guys are ridiculous.
Yeah, they're ridiculous.
I still wish that I could find some way to get to the Rumble in Philly this year.
Yeah. They keep doing it in Pennsylvania, and I'm just like, I feel like the time passed. I don't know, but it should be interesting this year, because who knows who's going to win? Like, they got the two brand thing going on again.
Yeah, Roman.
Maybe, but they could have the dude from the other brand win. You just don't know.
Gender.
No, I think Shinsuke is gonna win.
How shitty would it be if the final two are Roman and Jinder?
That's why I'm not going to the Royal Rumble. Dude, the two that were in Pennsylvania like the past years back to back. One was the Batista year, and then the other was the Roman year.
The only time I've been to the Rumble was in Philly, and it's the Rumble they will never talk about because the winner was Chris Benoit.
Oh man.
That was the year I went.
Nice.
So my Rumble experience no longer exists.
It's been wiped from the history.
Yes. That's such a good ending, too, with getting the Big Show over the top.
Yep.
But we should probably talk about games, shouldn't we?
I think that's why we're here. Man, I think that's what people are expecting.
Every time you're on, I say I want to do more wrestling shows. Like, I need you for a full episode just to talk wrestling.
Sure. Can do. We'll do we'll do a WrestleMania preview or something.
We'll make something happen. Maybe after the Rumble we'll do something.
Yeah. We can like speculate our WrestleMania card.
But
we should talk about games now.
Do we have to?
Like, yeah. I think these people gave us codes. They expect coverage, man.
Fuck. All right.
It's a quid pro quo.
Well, you're ending the show anyway, so if anyone made it this far, I'm sure they're just, they fell asleep and the show is just playing on YouTube as they nap, so no one's listening the way it is, but first game you're here to talk about is called Star Ghost, developed by Squarehead Studios, published by Rainy Frog, released November 30th on the Switch for $8.99. A megaton warfleet has been detected at the outer perimeter. Patrol 12 star systems in the most advanced starfighter ever built. Navigate the perilous fragments of exploding planets, survive intense asteroid fields, and dogfight with deadly sentinel ships as you defend against the relentless onslaught of the formidable Megaton Empire and save the human race. Tim, did you save the human race?
That's a big question. So this game was, it's a bit old. It was previously released on the Wii U. And when I started playing this game, I was like, oh, this must be a mobile game. So the way you control this game, it's horizontal scrolling, you have your ship, you control your ship just by like hitting the boost button. So think like Space Flappy Bird. But instead of jumping, like you hit boost and like your ship jets up towards the top of the screen and then, you know, gravity in space pulls it back down towards the bottom of the screen and you just shoot automatically. The only thing you can do is aim your shots. You can aim it slightly up or slightly down, which sometimes helps, but not often. And that's how you play this game. So I was like, oh, this must have been a mobile game at some point because this is how like a mobile shooter would go. You just shoot automatically. You'd kind of like you tap on the screen to make your ship go up and maybe tilt it to aim a little more. But no, it was only developed for consoles and that is it.
You said it was Wii U. Do you think it was built with like the gamepad in mind with tilting the screen and whatnot?
I don't know. So there's power-ups to pick up and you pick up like little space currency as you're flying through levels. When you get to the end of a level, you sometimes, and I don't understand why, sometimes you can purchase power-ups and sometimes you can't, even though I think you have money that you should be able to spend on it, but I don't know. I think it's because, so it's like you pick up power-ups for your shot rate, your spread, and your traction, whatever that is. And I think if the levels of those are already too high, the power-ups don't show up or something like that. Either way, when you buy something, there's a little voiceover clip that says, spending feels good. And that's my favorite part of the game.
Nice.
Buy something. Spending feels good. Okay. That's great. But yeah, you can power up your shot rate. You can, your fire rate. You can power up your spread of your shots. There's some other power-ups that show up occasionally, randomly, it seems like missiles and other stuff. But that's it. And your power-ups decay over time. So if you don't shoot things that drop said power-ups, or you just miss them as you're flying by, because it's not so easy to run into things that you want to when you're controlling the game the way that you have to, I don't know, you can get yourself into real shitty positions where your gun doesn't shoot very fast or spread very much, and it's just like, oh man, this is rough. So there's like, I think 12 sectors in this game, which are broken down to like multiple levels each. And so, you get a life. You get one life. And if you have 50 space bucks, when you die, you can buy an extra life. But if you don't have 50, because, I don't know, you spent it on power-ups, then you're just dead. And you have to start over completely from the beginning of the game. It just takes you back to the title screen.
Is that a lot of money compared to what you earn?
Like, I was able to earn it, but it's just such a, if you're not buying power-ups, you're probably going to die. Like, if you're saving up your money for an extra life and not buying power-ups, that is also increasing your chances of death because you're not shooting things.
Yeah.
But also, if you save up that money instead, then you'll die, and then you'll resurrect, you'll restore your ship, but then also you might still die because you're not very powerful. And also just because of, like, you know, the way your health doesn't restore between any levels at all, ever, unless you pick up a health power. But there's occasions where you have to navigate between, like, crags of rock, like, through canyons or such. And, like, if you make one wrong move, there's a very good chance you're going to hit the wall and you are going to die just out of nowhere. You could be in the middle of, like, a totally baller run and you'll just be dead. Back to the title screen. The title screen, which is just you hit A and you go again. There's no options. There's no, like, oh, maybe I just want to tweak the difficulty, like, or give myself some more lives. It's just, nope, you just go in, you play, you die, you go back, and that's it. There's no checkpoints. It's not like there's after, like, the second or third sector, there's a boss battle, and I was like, oh, I bet you there's a continue point here, right? No, back to the beginning. Press A to go back in the game from the start. Oh, and I'm just man. Like, oh my gosh, what the hell? And yeah. I just don't know why. I mean, it's you probably shouldn't play this game.
How do you think they could improve it? If nothing else, how do you think they could
freaking options, man? Like, give me some freaking options for more lives, some checkpoints, something. Like, let me ramp up to this one ship to make it through 12 sector thing, please. But the thing is, the game came out on Wii U. Like years ago, and then just here it is again. So I imagine in the meantime, they didn't say, hey, maybe we should try to make our game a little nicer to play.
A little more modern with some better quality of life changes to it.
Yeah, a little more tolerable. I mean, old school, sure, whatever. I don't know. But like, if you want to play a shooter, you should just get Xenoraid that I talked about a couple weeks ago. Bottom line.
Well, for $9, what is your official verdict on Star Ghost?
No. Please, no. Deny it. $9. That's crazy. No, thank you. Not to like insult people's work and what they want to charge for, but man, no.
Do you think they could at least like put some patches in there and
they could. I don't address. Think they will. If you know, keep your ear to the ground if you want, but
no.
Seems a dubious prospect at best.
I will cross my fingers they at least try to put some patches and fixes. It's never fun giving a deny it. So
yeah.
But next one to talk about is called Slain Back from Hell, developed by Andrew Gilmore in Stage Clear Studios, published by Digirati Distribution. This one released December 7th on the Switch for $19.99. You control the fate of a doomed hero who seeks to liberate 6 cursed realms from 6 deadly overlords. He must battle his way through the blighted land, packed with gruesome and lethal creatures, before ascending into a stronghold, all the while defeating fiendish traps and vile monsters alike. All hail the great horned metal god. Tim, did you hail the great horned metal god?
I did. When you get to the end of a level they ask you to press A to like pay homage to your god, and you will slam your sword into the ground and then headbang.
That's amazing.
Five to 10 seconds before moving on. And I think it's optional, but no, it's not optional. What are you doing? You need to do this at the end of every level. Okay, so yeah, I played this game when it came out for PC last year, so I am familiar with it. This game had kind of a bit of a rough history. For those that don't know, it was kickstarted. It was originally released like last spring. This would be spring like 2016. And it was not well received. You know, we talk a lot on the show when a game turns out bad, you know, what could they do to improve it? And the developers of Slain listened, and they kind of did a soft re-release sort of thing last August, which is when I ended up picking up, called Slain Back from Hell, which is the edition you get in your hands today. Yeah, I don't know what the game was like before, but I like this version. I've heard that the parrying system wasn't in there when the game was released, and that is crazy to me, because this game is tough. It's not like Volgar the Viking tough, but it's pretty tough. Like, it's a lot more liberal with its checkpoints, but it is that kind of like, it is a 2D platformer where you're gonna have to do some memorizing. It's tough, but there's pretty liberal checkpoints. Yeah, every time you hit a checkpoint, it refills your magic and health. So you can get through it. Like, it's not that bad. And you should get through it, because this game looks fucking awesome. It is, yeah, inspired by the world of, like, 80s metal record covers, basically. So it's, you know, it's just, and it's all pixel art. It's all gorgeously animated pixel art with like these nice deep detailed backgrounds, these well animated character sprites. It's just a freaking great looking game. Your offensive options, you have your sword, you can parry, as I mentioned, and I have to say, if you're gonna get anywhere in this game, you need to learn parry timing of every enemy, or you're just gonna die over and over again and not be happy. You gotta learn the parrying. You get a magic shot, which can be charged up. You have a charge attack, you get a couple of different weapons, but it's nothing like too crazy. Like, the different weapons you get have different elements on them, so they do more damage to certain enemies. I just like to use the giant ice axe they give you because it looks awesome and has a nice big fat hitbox on it. There is some secrets to find, and yeah, there's like 7-ish, 8 levels to get through. Just kind of like a hub. It's not like level 1, 2, 3, 4. They don't put numbers on them, and I can't count, so I don't know.
I can't count.
Yeah, I can't count. So, you know, it took me, like, I looked in my Steam, it took me like 6-7 hours to, you know, get my way through it when I played it initially. I mean, it was a lot easier going, playing it on the Switch, knowing parry timing and kind of knowing how the game plays.
Yeah. Well, since it's established
here's the caveat.
Okay.
Here's the caveat. So it definitely does not run perfect on the Switch.
Like, that's just what I was going to ask. How does it handle on the Switch?
Like, if you're standing still, it looks great. But like, once you're scrolling, like, I think it's like the screen doesn't scroll smoothly is what I think it actually is. It's not that like the frame rate drops. It's just like there's kind of a bit of stutteriness to how the screen scrolls, and it's totally playable. But if you have access to the PC version and your PC will run it, you should probably play it on PC. But it's totally playable, and like, it probably bugs me more having played it on the PC. And it's the same both on screen and off screen. I actually did plug it into my TV just to see, like, is this a thing on like the Switch handheld screen or not or what? But there just seems to be like a little bit of like stuttery, like maybe like frame loss going on when you move. So it's not like as smooth as it could or should be.
Yeah.
Which is a bummer. Cause it's like, the visuals are a big part of this game, but like I said, I've already said twice, it's still playable,
but soundtrack's still good on the Switch.
Yeah. The soundtrack's great. I should mention that. Yeah. It reaches for that metal 80s metal inspiration.
Soundtrack in this game. Holy shit.
Yeah, the game really hits its mark for what it's trying to do. It didn't end up being very well received when it was initially released. And I'm not sure how many outlets really looked back on it when the Back from Hell edition came out, but it was a much better game. And I think it's Man, if running through an action game based around metal albums or in the world of metal sounds awesome to you, like, this game is right up your alley. Graphics be damned, you know?
Yeah. I still remember when Nick from Digirati came on the show to chat about handful of games, and Slane was one of them, and we talked about the reception that it got when it first launched, and he was like, yeah, there were some fuck ups and we're going to fix it and we're going to make it better, and everyone who already bought the game is going to get this version. And I think everyone who had it got a second copy as well to give to friends on Steam.
I think I heard that too, yeah.
So not only did it have problems, but they went out of their way, they fixed it, made it better, re-released it, and hopefully whatever this stuttering issue you're talking about on the Switch is, hopefully they'll hear about it and be like, oh, well, that can't stand, and they'll fix that as well.
Surely not. Yeah, I was wondering if there would be like a day one patch. It comes out like today as we're recording this, but I didn't get my Switch up to look if there might have been a patch to smooth it over. But here's hoping. It's a really great game.
Just start the game now on the show.
It's upstairs. I'd have to get up, go up to the Switch, and do that.
That would be a really entertaining 4 minutes of the show.
Yeah.
Anyway, final game of the show to talk about is called Riptide GP Renegade, developed and published by our good friends at Vector Unit. It released December 7th on the Switch for $9.99. You are a hydrojet rider framed and cast out from the Riptide GP League, forced to race illegally through city waterways, flooded ruins, and churning factory machinery in an effort to reclaim your reputation and your title. It's a future of illicit racing where armored riders kick out death-defying stunts over massive waterfalls, dodge cops, and boost across surging waves. And you may also recognize that this is one of the initial inductees into the SML Hall of Fame. So, Tim, I want to know, how well does this play on the Switch?
Dude, I can't believe this game is only $10. Like,
I want
a $10 game.
I want to get this out of the way. In every review we've done at this game, I marvel over the fact of how fucking good their games look and how fucking small the file sizes are.
Yeah, like you were talking about that earlier. Like,
I lost my mind when we even had Matt from Vector Unit on the show, and I asked him, like, what kind of witchcraft do you guys do to get these visuals and these massive stages in such small file sizes? Like, the Xbox One version of the game is under 500 meg, which is mind-blowing. The Switch version is 140 fucking meg.
Yeah, and this is like a pretty fully featured, you know, 3D racing game.
Oh, I'm sorry, 151, not 140,
yeah,
150.
It's like big, yeah, with like fully featured polygonal racing game with like big levels and tons of different like jet skis and stuff, and it's just like, I mean, you know, it doesn't look as good as like Mario Kart 8, but it's, you know, this is a $10 downloadable budget racing game for freaking $10. Yeah, anyways, this game. So I jumped on it because I'm like, hey, anything that looks like it might be anywhere near Wave Race 64, I will give a shot to. And this seems like it's probably the closest to that I've played on that pursuit. I like it more than Blue Storm, which, you know, that's 15 years old at this point. Yeah, so it's a jet ski over water racing game. So waves make a difference on the track. There's watery physics that you have to contend with. And in this game, so in the original, in like Wave Race 64, like you could do tricks, but didn't, it was kind of meaningless during races. And this, you need to do tricks to charge up your boost meter, which, you know, makes you go fast. And it's a racing game, so you need to go fast. So tricks are integral to that. I'm trying to think where to go at this next. But that's the racing, I guess, in a nutshell. There's some levels that are kind of like a one-way thing, like you're going like down a river where you go over down waterfalls and you just get to the end and it's done. There's some that are more traditional races where you go around a track through factories, like getting shot at by battleships. Yeah, who put a wave race track here or whatever? I don't know. And this all seems to be highly illegal, what you're doing. Like you said, yeah, your dude gets arrested at the very beginning of the game for illegal water racing, or gets set up by, you know, this nefarious dickbag. You're thrown into jail, and then 2 years later, you're coming out, you're working your way back up the ranks, but it's all like seedy and underhanded, and you like make friends with a robot named Dead Beef, which is awesome. I only play as Dead Beef now that I have him unlocked. And yeah. So you have some stages are races, some stages are trick competitions where you just need to do tricks to earn points. There's some that are slalom events where they actually put buoys out, like much like what they had in Wave Race, and you just need to go around them and get the best time to the end without missing buoys. And there's elimination races, which is, I think, is a thing that they pulled from Burnout specifically, where a timer ticks down, whoever's in last place gets knocked out. So there's a few different variants on what you're doing in the levels. There's only 9 tracks, which is kind of a bummer, but the game's $10, so that's like $1 per track, a little more than whatever. I mean, that's like kind of my only beef non-dead with the game is that it only has 9 tracks, and I wish there were more because I like the game. But they do a good job with what they have, in changing things up and raising the difficulty. And the thing is, the story mode of this game has actually a very good progression to it, where you're earning experience, gaining levels. As you gain levels, you'll be able to purchase certain like bonuses for your character, like better boost speeds or better drafting speeds or other stuff, or more tricks, which is important because fancier tricks give you more boost, and then more boost makes you go faster. And it's a racing game. You got to go fast.
Got to go fast.
You also earn money, which you use to upgrade your jet skis. And as you finish like a chapter, you will unlock better jet skis with higher, stat ceilings that you'll then eventually power those up, move on to those. And along with like the main story stuff, there's a bunch of side stuff you do that can also give you money. Which, you know, I did hit a point where I was having a lot of trouble with the level, so I went back and did some of the side story extra mission stuff just to get some extra cash. But that stuff's all cool. Like, between every level, there's like little story bites with the characters, and it's kind of amazing, like, how much just like a little bit of story can add to a racing game. That's one of the reasons why I really dug Ridge Racer 4, because they had like little story snippets in between all the races in the story mode.
Keeps you invested.
It does, like, just like a little bit. And then, like, so, you know, sometimes there's these fun little dumb character moments in between levels. It's just like, okay, it's just like a nice little thing to like keep you going, more than just like, well, I'm just going to keep racing.
Have you found any Easter eggs in the game yet?
I don't think I found any Easter eggs.
Because there are literal Easter eggs. Like, you crash through an actual egg. Because they're eggs, and there's one in every stage, so there's something else you can look for.
Nice. I was too concerned with going fast. There's the story, which is quite lengthy. Like, I thought it was going to be kind of short, where I'm like, oh, there's only, like, 5 nodes on here, like, 5 chapters, but each chapter is broken down to, like, 4 other nodes that have, like, 3 races and events apiece. I'm like, oh, there's, like, actually a lot to do here. And besides that, you know, there's regular standard time trials. There's multiplayer, which was not on at the time of review. But, I mean, even if you're just going to play it single player, like, there's more than enough here to justify spending $10 on this game.
So I got to know, I'm not even going to ask whether it's worth buying or not, because the answer is yes.
Yes, the answer is yes.
Does the Switch version live up to the Hall of Fame status?
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. Absolutely. Yeah, there was no like choppy. It ran nice and smooth and looked good. And I played it on the TV and on the thing. It was good both ways. Though I will say, I think playing it on the TV made me realize I need to get a pro controller, because like my giant hands, like like I had a tough time holding down R to make my thing go, my jet ski go, while also doing other controls. Like, that actually started to cramp my hand, but that's, you know, that's me and my giant hands. But that was like playing it portably, which is how I mostly play my Switch games. That was totally fine. But now I'm just sitting there like, and then I went like right after our session, I went to play Xenoblade Chronicles, and like my hand again felt weird on this little controller. I'm like, I think I just got to get a pro controller. Like, this is suddenly really bothering me where it didn't before.
Yeah, I love my pro controller. Good stuff.
Yeah. Put it on my Amazon wish list.
There you go, man. Well, Tim, it is always good having you on the show, chatting about games and chatting about Rassholes.
Exhausting. That was a lot of
Yeah, you took on a lot. You were excited to tackle some of these.
Well, you got me on a Friday, and I'm like, I have the whole weekend ahead of me. I got all this freaking time. I literally spent like, I had to charge my Switch halfway through Saturday because I was playing it so much.
Holy shit.
Yeah. Neglected Xenoblade for a bit to get
Well, you can always get the Xenoblade Pro controller.
Yeah, it costs like $15 more than the regular one.
No, but, they're all stupid expensive. So, what are you going to do?
Yeah.
Anyway, that is it for this episode. Thanks again to everyone for joining and doing reviews with me. Tim, do you have any final words to end the show?
No, I don't. I got nothing this time. Sorry. I was too busy putting my heart and soul into reviews.